This is a CBC podcast.
Serial Murder, as performed by Martha Stewart, is how one critic describes Trevor Cole's new novel, Practical Jean. I must say it is one of the blackest comedies I've read in a long time, and like the best black comedies, it deals with some serious issues. Jean Vale Hormarsh is a middle-aged woman who watches her mother die a painful, drawn-out death from cancer. After it's over, Jean can't help wondering, what's the point of life or of anything? She decides to spare her closest friends the horror of what her mother went through, so she hatches a perfectly practical plan. She'll give each of them a last moment of pure happiness, and then, well, let's just say that Jean's idea of the duties of friendship go beyond, well, what most of us think. I think I can generalize about that. I don't like to, but I think I'm safe there. Practical Jean is Trevor Cole's third novel. Trevor lives in Hamilton, but he's with me in Toronto. Hi, welcome.
Oh, it's lovely to be here.
It's, you know what? It's lovely to read a funny novel. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I must say, I identified with her an awful lot. Where did the character of Jean Vale Hormarsh come from?
I think my mother probably was an influence. You know, I've met a number of women over the years who look at life in a very positive, practical way. And Mum certainly was one of those.
Mm. Jean, though, she has a more artistic bent, at least at the beginning of the story.
Yeah, it's funny how I seem to gravitate to characters that have, that feel a bit different from those around them. And an artistic spirit or an artistic bent seems to separate those of us who have it from others. And so, you know, all of my life I felt a little bit different from other people, and I think Jean feels that way.
What makes you feel different from other people?
Well, I think as a kid, I was the son of an actor in a community of farmers. And I was always very, you know, different and odd from the kids around me. And so I stood out. My sensibility was different from theirs.
I would say, too, one of the things that I've enjoyed about your writing, your magazine writing and profiles and so on, is that you could file some of them under the category, you are not who you appear to be. Even Stuart McLean isn't the folksy little charmer that he appears to be on the radio. You did a wonderful profile of him a few years ago.
And I had such fun doing that.
That was, you literally walked around inside his head, which was pretty, I shouldn't say literally, because, but you know, if it were possible to get inside.
That was my goal.
Yeah, and you did. And you're inside the head of this woman too, right from her childhood. How does it shape her?
You know, she's lived a life of feeling like an artist. You know, even as a child, she does things a little bit differently from other people. But she lives in a family that is completely different from her. They're very practical. Her mother is a veterinarian. Her father and her brothers are police officers. And so she's surrounded by people who don't understand her. And just to give people an understanding of what Jean does as an artist, she makes ceramics, quite odd, fragile ceramics about leaves. She's fascinated with leaves. And so all of her ceramics are quite impractical, easily broken. But she's forced to move beyond the beauty and the impracticality of her art when she's confronted with her mother's illness. And the horror of dealing with somebody in the last stages of life, in this case, cancer, changes Jean. It forces her into a sort of a slightly skewed version of practicality.
Jean decides that her closest friends, her closest circle, should not have to endure the kind of suffering that her mother went through.
Mm-hmm.
The solution that she comes up with, so they'll have this moment of beautiful, pure happiness, and then it's curtains.
Really, yeah, there's really only one way to guarantee that someone is not going to experience a slow, lingering death. So Jean does this, and she finds different ways to do it.
To commit murder.
Right. But doing it, writing it, was hard. You know, death has happened in my books before, but it wasn't deliberate. It was an accident. In this case, somebody is choosing to take a life. And, you know, I got sweaty palms when I was writing it. Even though it's a comedy, it still involves, you know, the act. And it was hard.
Have you experienced humor in a death? Or
No, I think it was Carol Burnett was one of the people who said that the difference between tragedy and comedy is time. You do need to separate yourself in order to bring humor to this thing. I mean, my father died 5 years ago, and it was the experience of dealing with his death and the aftermath of his death that informs my understanding in this book. And if I'd tried to write this 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to bring humor to it. The separation is important. You know, you get some perspective, and you can start to see that there are other ways to approach these subjects. You know, it doesn't have to be mournful always. You know, there's a time and a place for mourning. But at a certain point, you have to be able to look at things a little bit differently from a slightly skewed angle. I mean, there is laughter at funerals. I've been to many funerals where the gathering afterward, people are laughing about the person who's gone. So it's not a completely inappropriate
separate
thing.
Or, yeah. You've just made me think of something I haven't thought of for a long, long time. My stepfather died in 1989. He didn't want a fancy casket, so he was put in literally a pine box. But the funeral home wanted to dress it up a bit, so they brought out a blue plastic doily. And it was the first time I experienced, I could not stop the laughter, though.
No.
It just became extreme. And my stepsister was sitting beside me, and we were just cracked up.
The funeral process, the process of the funeral home is quite absurd and hilarious at times. And I think you have to be able to acknowledge that.
Mm. That, and at my father's funeral, the minister called me Dolores after I read the eulogy. Okay, enough about me. You must have had fun writing this book. You said it was hard to go to the place where you had to actually commit the act of murder. But mm-hmm. What was the most fun?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I had struggled for 3 years before this writing a very serious book. I had taken it on as my challenge after writing two comic tragedies to do the serious book. I thought, now is my time to be serious. And so I struggled, and I researched, and I delved into libraries, and I spent hours going through microfiche and old newspaper clippings, and then months and months of writing this very serious book. And I hated every moment of it. And I thought to myself, well, struggle is part of the job, and I will persevere. So I carried on. I finished the book. It was 450 pages. And then I set it aside for a couple of months, and then I read it, and my heart sank because it just wasn't me. It didn't resonate with who I am as an artist, and it felt like the work of another writer. And I had promised myself that I would finish, I would have a manuscript ready to hand in at a certain date, and I had 6 months to go before that date arrived. And I thought to myself, well, I can either spend these 6 months trying to fix this thing, or I can pursue something completely different. And I had had, luckily, another idea, and I had put it aside while trying to finish this other thing. But it, you know, it sort of sat in the background glowing as this alternative. And when I came to this turning point, I said, no, I've got to pursue this new idea. And it was Practical Gene. And so the act of writing Practical Gene was completely different and a total relief. It just gushed out of me. I mean, it was like I can mix metaphors all over the place here because each one is appropriate. It was like I was shot out of a cannon. It was like I was slingshot forward through this story. Everything came easily to me. Every scene was a joy to write. I had fun every moment of the way. And it reminded me that this is why I'm a writer. It's this joy. It's harnessing this fun.
And maybe you're a writer because you're making something beautiful or of value last. I mean, I don't want to give you an earnest twist because I know you hate earnest. I do too. But there were some points in the book where I could almost hear myself singing, "That's What Friends Are For," you know, the Dionne Warwick, I think. But what are friends for, do you think?
You know, as I go through life and as I encounter challenges, as I seem to be doing lately, friends are so important just to remind you that you're not alone and that there are other people out there who think about you and care about you. And just the continuance of that, just the sense of having this kind of netting around you that keeps you from falling, I think is so important. And I have received such kindness from friends over the last year or so. It's been a remarkable reminder of the role of friendship. And I have never been that good at friendship. You know, I have wanted to be. I don't think that I, you know, and I think this is true of many men. I've always thought of myself as self-sufficient. And as a child, I moved around a lot. My family moved around. So you don't get into the habit of continuing relationships. Mm-hmm. And so making friends has always been something that other people do better than I do. And maybe that's part of the reason why I wanted to explore it in the book. My mother was always tremendous at maintaining friendships. She, when she died recently, she, you know, she still had friends from high school that she was very close with. You know, and that's, you know, 60 years almost of friendship. I'm in awe of that, and I wanted to explore that. Mm. But as is my way, I had to find a slightly skewed way of looking at it.
I'm interested, now that you've raised it, in the differences between female friendships and male friendships. I mean, what do you think?
Men do things together. That's the big thing that separates the men. Women just are together. I think two women can probably spend an afternoon just being in each other's company with no expectations. I don't think that's possible for two men. Two men have to do something and share each other's company in the act of playing a hockey game or going to a baseball game or playing pool or whatever. But it seems to be situated around activity. The closest it gets to the female version of friendship is when two guys can go out for a beer and just chat about things, you know, that they might be going through. And you have to work a long time to establish trust with somebody in order to be able to do that to men. And I think women are better at this. I think they have a skill at keeping ties alive, you know, keeping the bonds strong in a way that men just don't understand. Because for centuries and eons, the men were likely off hunting by themselves somewhere, and so we just didn't acquire the genes for that. And now it's a hardship for us.
I'm just thinking about Jean and her evolution over the course of, I mean, I think she does become very practical. You have to, if you're going to kill people, mm-hmm. I guess you have to learn a certain kind of practicality. You do set up the practical people in her family against Jean, for example, who's more whimsical, more artistic, certainly more imaginative. Why did you want to play with that dynamic?
This was based on somebody I met. And so this was somebody who grew up as an artist among police officers. And that there's an inherent conflict in that relationship. You know, when you are a singularity in the midst of something, you know, in an environment that's quite different from you, it forces the personality to adjust and to adapt and perhaps to struggle, and it forces you to examine yourself and examine life. And so these are all things that's good fodder for a novelist, you know, this kind of chafing against the world that you're in. If Jean had grown up like everyone around her, there'd be nothing to talk about. There'd be no struggle to illuminate. So I was fascinated. As soon as I heard this, that this woman had grown up as an artist among police officers, I thought, oh my, what a life she must have had. I really have to do something with that. And an idea came to me about 3 months later, and I explored it.
Clearly, it's a good idea. It's a nominee for this year's Rogers Writers Trust Fiction Prize. That's nice.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Trevor Cole, he's the author of Practical Jean. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.